Hi, this is Jane Garvey. Thank you for downloading Wednesday morning's edition of the Woman's Hour podcast. We had a lot of fun this morning. Loads of terrific involvement from you. Thank you very much. Here we go with the programme. Good morning. Today, we find out what it's like to give birth at the very luxurious Portland Hospital in central London and what you get for your money there. Well, I know for a fact you get a free cuddly panda when you check out. Now, contrary to what you read or see or hear, there are many, many people, many of you, in happy, committed relationships. And today, we celebrate that fact. We're also talking about flatulence. That may or may not be a factor in your happy, committed relationship. You can always tweet us at BBC Woman's Hour or email the programme via our website. And Maria Merrion made a big contribution to the study of insects, and she was way, way before her time. More about this 17th century explorer later in this edition of Woman's Hour. So do you fancy this? Giving birth celebrity style at the Portland Hospital in London. All you need is the money. Prices start at about £8,000, which is the point at which most of us decide we won't be giving birth at the Portland. Now, if you're curious about this place, and I often walk past it, actually, on my way to the Tube, well, some of that curiosity is going to be satisfied by a BBC Two documentary tonight. Five Star Babies gives us a glimpse of the opulence, the free cuddly toy when you leave, and the one-on-one attention. Your consultant, honestly, is at your beck and call. And then there's the catering.
The Portland receives patients from all over the world and from all walks of life. We have celebrities, individuals of very high net worth. They are women that are used to getting what they want. But, you know, we're a hospital that's trying to deliver what they want. If they want to have 10 additional rooms, 20 additional rooms, we'll provide it. As long as that woman or her husband can pay for what they're requesting, then we'll do our best to deliver. We're really focused on our food quality, the look, the presentation, modelling that on the top hotels, the Dorchester and others.
We can get lobsters, we can get oysters if people want them. We have a fantastic champagne selection here as well. Not every hospital stocks Dom Perignon and things like that.
Because we want to deliver that five-star service for patients that are used to receiving a five-star service. We've got to fundamentally remember that we're a hospital. So we are a hotel, but primarily we're a hospital.
Primarily a hospital. That was Janine Madden, I'm sorry, CEO of the Portland. Shazia Malik is here, consultant obstetrician and gynaecologist. And you work at the Portland one day a week. And where do you spend the rest of your working life?
So I also work part-time in the NHS as a consultant in North London.
Right. Do you spend more time in the NHS than at the Portland?
On average, yes. But it depends, of course, when my patients come in.
Ah, cool. Yeah, because they can call you at the Portland anytime they like.
They can, indeed.
OK. And I bet they do. And Dr. Tracy Johnston is a consultant in fetal and maternal medicine at the Birmingham Women's Hospital, the NHS Trust there. Tracy, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Now, tell us, I know that we've all seen the documentary. Obviously, the listeners haven't. It's on BBC Two tonight at 9 o'clock. What did you think when you saw it, Tracy?
It portrays a very, very different world. Women give birth every day. The vast majority of women in this country don't have that choice available to them to deliver in such a setting. And it really highlights the discrepancy between what most women can access and what a very small, self-selected part of the population are able to access.
What struck you in particular about what went on at the Portland? And basically, of course, we should emphasise, this is a documentary, it's been edited, we are invited to take a view, but give us what your opinion.
It focused very much on the surroundings, on the catering and that side of things. When you look at what makes up a quality service, there are three elements to that. First and foremost is patient safety. Secondly is clinical effectiveness, using the resources appropriately. And thirdly is patient experience. And what came across in the documentary was very much the patient experience rather than the safety and clinical effectiveness, which may be a given, but certainly within the NHS, there are limited resources and we have to focus very much on safety first and clinical effectiveness second, and then patient experience, which is what our women want. They want a safe service.
Of course, and I don't suppose anybody checking into the Portland wants anything other than a safe service either. And Shazia, what happens if there's a real emergency at a hospital like the Portland, a private hospital? You get taken to the NHS, don't you?
No, that's so not true, and unfortunately it doesn't come across in the documentary. So I can tell you from personal experience that I have delivered women who are either sick before the delivery or very sick during or afterwards, and I've not had to transfer a single patient. So we have one-to-one high dependency care there, which is what we need for 99.5% of the women who have a problem. And the beauty of the Portland actually is that if a woman in the excruciatingly rare circumstance, if she needs intensive care, then we have our own within HCA, we have our own intensive care unit.
HCA, what's that?
HCA is the organisation that runs the Portland Hospital.
It's a big, big private health company.
Big private health company. But I also work at the Princess Grace Hospital, which is exactly 3 minutes
That's
away.
That's also private.
It is. And it's exactly 3 minutes away. And our patients do not need to go to the NHS. They go to the ITU there. And the last time that happened, I think, was probably about the last time serious incident happened was many years ago, but at the Portland we've transferred two women out in the last 2 years.
The too posh to push thing is something that always crops up, and I'm more than happy to out myself as somebody who had two elective cesareans. I have no axe to grind here, but there is a higher rate of cesareans at the Portland, is there not?
I think it depends how you break down the figures. And when you say higher rate, if you look at individual NHS trusts, some of them have exactly the same caesarean section rate as Portland.
What is your caesarean section?
So it's approximately 35%.
That's very high.
It's not actually that high when you break it down. So a lot of our patients are insured. So they don't come here because they only want to have a caesarean section. They actually have a medical need for a caesarean section. The majority of our caesarean sections at the Portland Hospital are done for a medical indication and not because of maternal choice. And insurers often cover women only in that circumstance and not because she's chosen to have a caesarean section. So we have lots of insured patients who come because their insurance has agreed to cover their caesarean section.
Okay, your caesarean section rate, what is it, Tracy?
Ours runs about 26% in Birmingham Women's.
So,
which is very close to the national average.
Yeah, which is it's about a quarter of births in the NHS, isn't it?
That's correct,
yeah, okay.
Yes.
I mean, Andy, are you happy with that rate of 26%? What do you think of that?
Nobody knows what the correct caesarean section rate is, and there are many, many reasons for caesarean section. And the easiest way to break it down is those that are elective planned caesarean sections, so women come along and either have a medical indication or have made that choice to be delivered by caesarean section. And then there are those that are done as an emergency because of complications that have arisen. I think we can always work better to try and reduce unnecessary caesarean sections. But women's choice is an element of this that has to be taken into account.
Shazia?
I think it's also really important to make the point that a caesarean section is not a failure or disaster of care. And we're at risk of making women feel that if they've had a caesarean section, somehow we have failed them. Or if they choose to have a caesarean section, it is something that they should feel ashamed or worried about. And I think it's, you know, speaking as a woman, as a mother, as an obstetrician or gynaecologist, I don't want caesarean section to somehow become a dirty word.
No, but there is no doubt that it's an expensive option and one that may well be available to the patients at the Portland, but not necessarily to the women that Tracy's treating.
Well, actually, if you're talking about planned and not emergency caesarean section, and if you're only talking about women who choose to have a caesarean section without a medical indication, the NHS is as supportive as we are at the Portland of women making that choice. Part of the government's recommendations for NHS maternity care are all about maternal choice. And also, if you look at the cost of a caesarean section, it's an average cost that you're given by the government or the NHS. But actually, the cost of a complicated vaginal birth that goes wrong when maybe a woman might have had a caesarean section is far greater.
Right. Let's talk about what happens to the babies after they're born healthily. Obviously, in the majority of cases, thank goodness, they go at the Portland, or they can go, into a nursery. Not always, but often, I think. What happens to the babies at your hospital, Tracy?
They stay with their mothers.
Why?
Unless there is a medical reason for that baby to be in a special care unit or the neonatal intensive care unit, they will stay with their mothers. The reason for that is it improves bonding. Most women choose to breastfeed, and most women want their babies beside them. The vast majority of the women that I look after would be horrified at the thought of their baby getting taken away from them.
There is a nursery, though, isn't there, at your hospital, Tracy?
We have a special care baby unit and we have a neonatal intensive care unit, but we don't have a nursery.
Oh, OK, so there is absolutely no option to put your baby in the nursery if you just want a couple of hours' kip?
No, the baby stays by the bed.
Right, OK. And Shazia, how many women at the Portland would put their baby into the nursery and how many would have it with them?
It is very, very variable. Let me tell you about the patients that I've delivered at the Portland Hospital. The majority of them, like any other new mother, want to keep their baby with them. But the beauty of our nursery is that if the woman is, or and indeed her partner, because we let our partners stay with our mothers at the Portland Hospital, if they need some rest in between feeds, then we have experienced staff who can look after their baby, so that when they go home, they're in a fit state to look after their child. I remember when I had my first daughter, I'd had, I think, in 3 days, about 4 hours sleep, and I was a wreck.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of women will be able to relate to that. But yeah. I just wonder, I mean, it seems, I can't think of a better start in life, actually, than spending my first couple of days, more or less, in my mother's nightdress. I mean, how good can that, I mean, there can't be a better alternative. And that alternative is not spending the night in a nursery with a load of other howling babies, surely.
Well, the thing is that, are you talking about the mother or the baby?
Well, I suppose I'm thinking about the baby. I mean, it does seem at the Portland that you are able to prioritise the mother. Very nice for her, but what about the baby?
Well, we are not telling women to put their baby in the nursery. We have that facility if a mother chooses in between feeds to put her baby in the nursery, and it is her choice. So we're not asking women to do that. And we have somebody, as you will see in the programme tonight, who is fantastic. She's like a fairy godmother with
Pat.
These babies.
Yes.
And she is able to keep them calm, happy, content and well cared for.
Yeah, but there's one woman to 8 babies.
Well, most newborn babies sleep 22 hours a day. So most of the time, that woman is only looking after one of those 8 babies that may be awake for a few minutes. She's not got 8 howling babies. And of course, the baby can go back to its parents at any point. And the other thing I have to say is that she's not bottle feeding all these babies. So at the Portland, we have dedicated breastfeeding counsellors who come and teach our women
right.
to
well,
breastfeed.
Right, I mean, you have the luxury of time as well, don't you? Tracy, I imagine a lot of women are discharged from the Birmingham Women's Hospital within, 24 hours of giving birth?
Yes, when you look at the national figures, just under 44% of women go home within 24 hours of giving birth.
Is there enough time, honestly, not just to recover from the birth, but to teach first-time parents about how to bath the baby, all that stuff?
If women aren't confident in going home, they stay. Most women want to get home. I mean, I've had 3 children. I was home very, very quickly after all of them. I had 3 domino deliveries and was in, delivered and out again very quickly because I wanted the comfort of my own home. Now, if women have problems with feeding, we've got a dedicated breastfeeding team as well. They come, they teach. If feeding isn't established or the woman isn't confident to go home, of course they stay. There's also the support in the community as well. They're not going home and being abandoned. The community midwife goes in, there is breastfeeding support in the community as well. So you really do have to individualise choice, and in the vast majority of cases, women want to get home quickly.
Tracy, thank you very much. There's so much more we could talk about here, and I really hope the listeners get involved on Twitter and on email. You can email via the website, Twitter away at BBC Woman's Hour, and you can spend, if you want to, Shazia, nearly £500,000. I think one woman didn't she, at the Portland?
I don't think it's just one, but
Okay, it is another. It's another planet, and also, why
but,
would
but
you?
But a very wonderful one. I do enjoy working there.
No, no, I'm sure you do. Why would you want champagne? Just as a point of interest, why would anyone want champagne after childbirth?
I have no idea. I don't drink.
Okay, fair enough. And I had a flagon of tea and greatly enjoyed. Keep your thoughts coming, please. Now, when the much-loved magician Paul Daniels died recently, honestly, you really would have to have had a heart of stone not to have been really moved by the tribute paid to him by his wife, Debbie McGee. Here she is talking to the BBC's Andrew Peach on the day his death was announced.
Whilst dining, I started thinking about whether my marriage could be classified as a happy one. For almost 20 years.
Our life has been full of laughter. You know, we had a fairy tale life and we were so happy together.
I'm not sure I've ever seen a couple as in love with each other as you and Paul, Debbie. Do other people say that?
Yes. I had a letter yesterday from a lady that actually who'd met us, you know, and she said, the thing is, Debbie, you had a marriage that everyone dreams of. I did.
Debbie McGee talking about her late husband, Paul Daniels, and about their very, very successful relationship. Why don't we hear more stuff like that? Interestingly, we very rarely have a problem getting guests to talk about subjects on this programme, even really difficult ones. But this proved a bit of a challenge. It seems that too many of you don't want to come across as smug. Penny Mansfield is the director of One Plus One. Penny, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Now, yours is a charity which supports research into relationships, basically.
Yes.
Were you surprised that there were a lot of people who were a bit hesitant about talking about their happy relationships?
Not at all. As someone who's researched relationships for, you know, over three decades already, I think it's part... There are several reasons. One is... In a way, the ordinariness of your life with a partner. Sometimes you think, well, you know, if it's going smoothly, it is rather boring, maybe. And it's only when something goes wrong that you think, oh, right, perhaps I'll tell someone about it. The other thing is the smug marriage, you know, the sort of the Bridget Jones bit, you know, that these people who actually almost seem to show off about the fact that they get on so well and everybody goes, aha. And then, of course, what comes from that is this fear of jinxing it. So actually, you don't want to say, because what if tomorrow something goes wrong, you find out actually that it wasn't what it seemed, or indeed you're afflicted by an illness or something. So, you know, let's leave well alone, let's just enjoy it and just leave it as it is. So no, I'm not at all surprised.
And in a way, it's actually quite hard to celebrate contentment. Isn't it? It's a difficult thing to even define.
Well, yeah, we're I think we're much more able to talk about failed expectations than what we expect. And that's why contentment is hard to describe. But when it goes wrong, then you think, well, it's not what it was. And that is easier to talk about.
Some people would have you believe the key to all this is just low expectations. What do you think?
Well, I think having looked at a lot of relationships, the one thing I would say is that when you actually get involved in talking to people about that sort of intimacy, I don't necessarily mean sexual, physical intimacy, but the intimacy of a life shared, the ways in which, you know, people do finish their sentences and they have a fantasy about the fact that they see things the same way. And yet when you're an interviewer, you find actually it is like that old song, you know, we met on Monday, no, it was Friday, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And there's something very charming about that. And I think in some ways it's quite private and people don't look at it until after it has gone, when they've lost a partner. So probably the most eloquent people are people who have, like Debbie, lost a partner. They know then what they've not got anymore.
But sad that we only do it when it's over. You're right. Let me just read you this from a listener who says, if you take your cue from TV, films and, yes, Radio 4, women typically have a husband who doesn't really understand them or communicate with them, and a cabal of girlfriends, including a female best friend who know the real her and with whom she shares the things she can't share with her husband. What you never see portrayed or discussed is the woman whose best friend is her husband. Why? My husband and I are each other's best friends and we have been for 17 years. And I know a couple of other women who would admit to the same shocking blasphemy. Now, I get what that listener is saying, that there is a sort of given, isn't there, that, oh, my, if you happen to be heterosexual, oh, my husband doesn't understand me, but my best mates do.
Yes, and actually, when you study relationships, you find that while it is very nice to have a partner who understands you and is there for you, and actually that's what many people value in a relationship, other relationships matter a lot as well. They help to support that kind of relationship. So actually being able to, you know, have a chat with a friend and say, oh, he's done my head in tonight, you know, whatever, is important. It doesn't mean to say that he's always doing that, or that, you know, in a relationship where you, you're going through a difficult time. Often one of the things that we found is people found it as a way of being able to really get in touch with the essence of why they're together, because they've been through a difficult time and they made it, either because they could have gone or that actually they see the strength in it. So actually sometimes it's hard for people to define it and to therefore be able to talk about it.
Now, you change, of course, during a relationship, and actually at the very beginning, in the first heady couple of months, you are seeing the best of yourself reflected in that other person. You're both giddy with the excitement of how wonderful you both are, aren't you? And that just changes. It goes.
Absolutely. And we know a lot about how relationships develop over time. And in a very simple way of looking at it is people like to be quite dependent.